We are coming your way live from the Messianic Jewish Conference in Pennsylvania. You don't want to miss a moment of what's coming next.
It's time for The Line of Fire with your host, activist, author, international speaker, and theologian, Dr. Michael Brown, your voice of moral, cultural, and spiritual revolution. Michael Brown is the director of the Coalition of Conscience and president of Fire School of Ministry. Get into The Line of Fire now by calling 866-34-TRUTH. That's 866-34-TRUTH. Here again is Dr. Michael Brown.
Well, hey, friends, it is great to be with you. Let's hear from our live audience out here. All right. It almost feels like Let's Make a Deal or something like that, some game show with a live audience. Hey, Ron and Shani, come on up here. Is Grantham, Pennsylvania, the Messiah College campus? Every year, the Messianic Jewish Alliance of America holds this conference, and hundreds of believers come from all over America, all over the world. And we just figured I'm going to grab different people, different friends that are here, and get them to come in, talk about things that are happening in Israel. Yeah, Ron, just make a lot of noise. Yes. Not going to get in the way of millions and millions of people listening around the world at this very moment. But we are glad to be here. And yesterday's broadcast was pre-recorded. And because it was pre-recorded, I was not able to address some of the breaking news. There was the major news for the Supreme Court with the Hobby Lobby ruling, and I was expecting that. The most interesting thing to me is the degree of outrage and fury from some people over this, that Hobby Lobby is not going to provide certain abortion-related drugs to their employees, and the Supreme Court ruled in their favor. The hostile response to that is so over the top. That is telling. But then, of course, the tragic news from Israel that the three teenagers who were kidnapped, apparently were killed shortly after being kidnapped, and the nation's just in shock. And there's something kind of unique with Israel, as small a nation as it is, just past the 6 million mark in terms of Jews in the land. And as much as there's world hostility towards Israel and the recognition that there has to be constant security, that when you have something like this with three young men kidnapped, the thought was, okay, they're going to be kept alive, obviously, so that they can be used to barter for prisoners, Hamas, Palestinian Authority, prisoners freed, Fatah prisoners freed. The fact that they're found dead has just been so traumatic. So I just want to try to give you a feel for how it feels to be in Israel. I want to talk about that. I want to talk about some reconciliation movements involving young people, older people, Jews and Arabs, believers trying to work together. And if you have a question, even though we've got a live audience, if you have a question, just shout out. If you think you have a question out in the audience here you'd like to ask today, just shout. That's the quietest shout that I've heard. Okay. If you just like to ask a question at some point in the show, just shout out. Yeah, I've got to just say something. So nobody has a question here.
Maybe just so people will know that you're really here. Just everyone shout right now.
Well, they had already clapped. They had already
clapped. Oh, you already clapped. That's what I get for being late.
Right. So right before you came in. But if you want to call in with a question, what it means is not only will our live radio audience hear the question around the country or folks listening on internet around the world, but our audience here, our physically live audience, will hear the question. So if you want to call, the number to call is 866-34-TRUTH, 866-348-7884. Anything you want to talk to me about, relevant or irrelevant, we'll try to get to that as well. To connect on the website, ask Dr. Brown, askdrbrown.org. If you haven't clicked on latest video, please do. When you get there, you can watch the debate that I did with Matthew Vines about can you be gay and Christian on Saturday morning. I think you'll find it to be really eye-opening. And then my latest article, which lays out why it's impossible to affirm homosexual relationships and believe in the full authority of Scripture at the same time. So that's my website, Ask Dr. Brown, askdrbrown.org. Just click on latest video or latest article. We come back. We're going to be joined by two dear friends, longtime friends of the family, Ron Cantor and Shani Ferguson. I want to talk about the mood in Israel, the feel in the land, and what's actually going on behind the scenes, some good news that you may not be aware of. We'll be right back.
Change the world. It's The Line of Fire with your host, Dr. Michael Brown, your voice of moral, cultural, and spiritual revolution. Here again is Dr. Michael Brown.
Well, unfortunately, all of Israel tonight is united in mourning. We are mourning the three young teenagers who were brutally murdered by Hamas, by the Hamas terrorists. Unfortunately, Hamas has shown us once again that they see every Israeli civilian, man, woman, and in this case, children also, as a legitimate target in their war of terror against Israel.
This is Michael Brown. Welcome to the Line of Fire. We're coming your way live. All right, there we go. Live from Grantham, Pennsylvania, the Messianic Jewish Alliance, the annual conference. How many of you folks that are here, if you live within a half hour of the conference center here, the Messiah College, just clap if you live within a half hour of here. All right. If you traveled more than 5 hours to get here, clap. All right. If you walked and hiked more than 40 hours and can still, no, okay. We do want to talk about something very serious. That was the voice of Israeli government spokesman Mark Regev talking about the tragedy of the three kidnapped Israeli teenagers, their bodies found. And again, it wasn't just the trauma of the loss, but the trauma of expecting somehow that these kids were going to be found alive. At least there could be some negotiating for them. I want to talk with Shani Ferguson. We've known Shani and her family since the mid-'80s. And Shani grew up in Israel but has lived in the States a lot, lives in Israel with her husband Kobe and their great family, their three daughters and one son. Or am I missing somebody? No, that's right. Okay. Shani, what's the difference in Israel in terms of how this traumatizes a nation or how the whole nation was traumatized from the moment of the kidnapping? We have tragedies, horrific things taking place day and night in America, but this seems to have a different effect in Israel. How so?
You know, it's in light of that, really still hard to talk about it because somehow in Israel, it feels like we're all in the same boat. We are rude to each other on the street. We will honk at each other and, you know, what are you driving? But Israel knows how to mourn together better than any people group that I know. I mean, it's almost like that's what we do best is we mourn and we cry out to God and then we screw up and then we mourn and we cry out to God. And in the States, it feels like it's a big country. The closest thing I ever felt, I was actually in the U.S. when 9/11 happened, and that was the closest thing I ever felt where everybody seemed to have this awareness, this consciousness, this kind of like sadness, this like feeling of loss. And in Israel, being a small country and realizing that if we don't unite, nobody is uniting for us. Nobody is rooting for us. Except for maybe in Micronesia or, you know, Canada. and Christians around the world that really love Israel. But it's really just a deep, deep sense of loss. You feel like you lost someone who is a part of you even though you've never met him. I lie in bed and cry that this happened. And I don't know these people, but it's still very gripping. And that's just the culture that is there, and that's just, I think, the united history that we have and the future that we look out to and say, you know, this is our land, this is our people, and this is just our lot in life, and so we kind of accept it and embrace it.
Obviously, there's a recognition that there has to be some type of retaliation and the goal to stop Hamas from doing this more. Of course, the more they're attacked, then the more they want to attack back, the more there's the martyr complex and the cycle goes on. Is there a sense of despair in Israel in the midst of this or hopelessness like it's never going to end? Or is it more a matter of we just have to protect ourselves because no one else is going to?
I think it's both. I mean, I think on some level you kind of are like, well, you have to do something. Otherwise, they'll think it's okay and they can do it again. On the other hand, you know that when you do something, everyone, the whole world's going to get mad at us for even responding or breathing or taking an extra breath, you know. And so it's very much a sense of like no win. There's nothing we could possibly do. You can't blow them off the planet because that's inhumane. You can't target them because it takes too long, and by the time we manage to find the terrorists, then the UN shuts us down. You can't say, you know, give peace a chance, because that obviously doesn't work either. So,
yeah, I just was sent a note earlier about the Qasemeh Hamas members, a leading family, Hamas family in Hebron. So this is a tribal group leading it. And there's a list of family members, and I'll just give the first name. Mahmoud, suicide bomber in Haifa, bus, killed at the age of 37. Hazem, committed shooting attack in Kiryat Arba, now dead. Fuad, suicide bomber in Gross Square in Hebron, dead. Hamza, killed on the Tanal Uzari, dead. Mohassan, committed attack on the Gahot settlement, dead. Ra'ad, suicide bomber of Jerusalem bus 2 massacre, dead. And it just, there are a few more. Suicide bomber in Beersheba, dead. There's one of them, a leader, was arrested. Everybody else martyred. So obviously this is the mentality, that this is the fight, this is the battle, this is some kind of holy war and holy cause. So that's the tremendous agonizing challenge in the midst of it. Ron Cantor, we were together in Israel. I've got a bunch more questions for you, Shani, but let's just switch over to Ron. We were just together in Israel and
yes,
did an interview from there. So Ron and I have been friends for 31 years.
Since now. 1984.
Yeah, yeah, extraordinarily enough. So it's going on 31 years. And Ron, you've been following things carefully. Give me the update. What do we know? What's happened? What's the government stance right now?
Well, what's being reported right now is that two Hamas terrorists were seeking to kidnap probably one Israeli. Did not realize that there were three boys that were going to get in their car. When three boys got in their car, and one of them actually made a phone call, this is really the real tragedy of the situation, is that one of them actually called, it's 100 in Israel, but it's the equivalent of 911 here, and the folks who answered it didn't take it seriously. So it was 7 or 8 hours.
Yes, they tried to call back, just got voicemail or busy signal, so they thought it was just a prank.
They thought it was a prank. They never, they didn't follow it through. They didn't send it to the army. And so no one knows what would have happened had they begun to search immediately. But once, what is being pieced together is that once these two terrorists saw that a phone was being used, they wrongly assumed that they were being hunted by the Israeli army, and they panicked and shot the three teenage boys. Probably, they're saying, within the first 10 minutes after they kidnapped them.
And then I guess they switched cars, burned that car.
Right.
But they found the blood in the car and everything now.
Right. And then they noticed in the sweeps that the Israeli army did through the territories, these two boys could not be accounted for. They knew they were Hamas members. And so and they still have not been able to find them. Obviously, they've gone underground.
Just one specific question. Lisa in Washington, D.C., you had a question about one of the teens. Why don't you go ahead and ask your question now?
Yes. My husband and I were in Nevada this past week.
Yeah.
And we met a young man who owns a shop there in one of the hotels. He's from Israel. All of his family lives in Israel. And he said that the facts are that just two of the boys were Israeli. One of the boys was an American. I wanted to know if you heard anything about that, or if anybody knows anything about that.
Well, actually, they were all Israelis. It's very common in Israel to have dual citizenship. I am actually an American. I'm also an Israeli. Shani, I guess you are as well. But all of those boys, as far as I know, I'm 99.9%.
They're Israelis. One of them had American citizenship.
Right.
But they're all Israelis.
Right.
Yeah. Hey, thank you for the call. I just wanted to clarify that because I know that's come up. So the Israeli security pretty well isolated the two Hamas members responsible. The theory then, again, they thought they were kidnapping one, ended up kidnapping three. So those they've interrogated the family members. That's how they ended up getting close enough to discover the bodies.
Right. It was on the territory, the family land of one of the kidnappers.
Right. From what you know, has Israel announced plans of what it's seeking to do? And you've got Palestinian Authority, and then you've got Hamas in Gaza, and they're two separate entities.
Well, the strange, or really the unfortunate thing for the Palestinian Authority, is that they just had a big unity
exactly
pact with Hamas. Even though they're a terrorist organization, And the PLO used to be a terrorist organization. They're considered mild now.
Right.
They reunited with Hamas because peace talks broke down with Israel. And this is the first major thing to happen. So,
and then, of course, they condemned Mahmoud Abbas for condemning the kidnappings.
Right.
And then they were even when Palestinian Authority police let the Israeli authorities come in to search out areas, the Palestinian Police Department got attacked by Palestinians because they're upset with the Palestinian police, Palestinian Authority, for working with Israel. So, I mean, Abbas, more than anybody, is right in the middle of this whole thing.
Right. But this is, you know, this is what he bargained for. He decided to make peace with terrorists. And, you know, there's a story, I'll tell it real short, about a frog and a scorpion. And I hear the music, so I'm not going to be able to tell that story.
Exactly. I know it because I'm Jewish, so I know the joke and the story. But we'll tell it on the other side of the break. If you've got a question, give us a call, 866-34-TRUTH.
It's the Line of Fire with your host, Dr. Michael Brown. Get into the Line of Fire now by calling 866-34-TRUTH. Here again is Dr. Michael Brown.
I think the main person who's responsible for the tragic death that happened is Mr. Netanyahu himself. He sent these boys as illegal settlers to an illegal settlement. Mr. Netanyahu should have protected them, and he wants to retaliate without even bringing a single proof that any Palestinian was responsible for their death.
That's the voice of Dr. Mustafa Barghouti of the Palestinian National Initiative Party. He was speaking on BBC News Night yesterday. The background music that you heard was from Hamas's Al-Qassam Brigade singing Bless Hamas's Al-Qassam Men, Guardians of Palestine. And then it goes on, all the explosives of this Hamas bomb maker, martyrdom, all loves of the trigger, killing the occupiers is worship that Allah made into law. The Arabic text literally, killing Jews is worship that draws us close to Allah. Ron, you were right before the break going to give an illustration. It's, on the one hand, a silly little story, but it's very illustrative about the frog and the scorpion.
Right. I actually learned it in my Hebrew language class 10 years ago. But there's a frog and a scorpion. Scorpion wants a ride across the creek. The frog says, no, you're a scorpion. You're going to sting me. He said, no, I promise. I'm not going to do it. And they go back and forth. Finally, the frog is convinced that the scorpion has changed. He gets on the back of the frog, gets about halfway across the creek. In fact, they're almost all the way across the creek, and the scorpion stings the frog. And as the frog is dying, he says, but you promised that you wouldn't. He said, I know, but I'm a scorpion. It's what I do.
That's what scorpions do.
And so when Abbas decided to make peace with a terrorist organization, he should not be surprised with that within weeks, they kidnapped three Israelis and murdered them in cold blood. Not, and again, we're not talking about soldiers who were that they're fighting against. We're talking about teenage boys coming home from school.
Yeah, Shani, you've been involved with the ALAV conference, the annual youth conference, and I know that you've made special efforts to reach out to Palestinian believers, and that there have been some special things that have happened. Tell me about the hearts of the young people for reconciliation and then what you've been involved with firsthand.
Well, I'll start by saying that my children go to school in a school that is half Arab and half Jews, and each classroom has an Arab teacher and a Jewish teacher, and we did that specifically for one so that they could learn both languages but also understand the culture that they're going to grow up in and their neighbors, and so they learn all about the Christian Arabs and the Muslim Arabs and the Jews, and it's just a real good, this is what we believe, that we want our children to be aware and to have friends that are Arab. So everything that we do stems from our love for the Arab people, our understanding that they will be there on some level or another despite what political lines are formed. ALAV is a conference that is put on annually by Sukkot Hillel. It's Rick and Patty Ridings. And they basically bring a few hundred Palestinian Arabs from the West Bank. They get special permission, and usually it's the Palestinian Authority that gives the hardest time getting them into the country. You'd think it would be the Israeli side, but it's not. Israel's like, great, great, let's find some Arabs that are just happy and love Israel. But it's interesting because we've had some come over, and they experience some of the stuff that you see on the news. They experience, you know, they have a bad encounter with a soldier, or, you know, their uncle or something is taken to prison for something, and they kind of grow up in that environment of just not really trusting the other side, the Jewish side. And when they come to Elav, there's a lot of time, a real sweet time of reconciliation, of Israeli soldier believers hugging Arabs and praying together and blessing each other, and the Palestinian Arabs praying for the Israeli soldiers to be safe. And it's just a really, you really understand that the only way to really unite and heal is through Yeshua, and there is such a deep, legitimate pain and offense on both ends that can only supernaturally be reconciled. And all this political talk of like, okay, we'll give you land and you won't kill us anymore or whatever it sounds good, but it's really a deep, deep-seated healing, spiritual healing that needs to happen. And there have been Palestinian Arabs who will say, you know, I just grew up and I felt when I was 15, I suddenly just felt anger and I was just hated everybody and I just wanted to fight with everybody. And the other day I was actually driving through a little Arab neighborhood, and it's a shortcut. So this one guy accidentally hits another guy in his car, and so the two Arabs get out and they start spitting on each other, and they all like fall in the hood of my car and they're like beating each other up, and I'm like, meh, meh. But this is them fighting each other. It's just, they're so full of like a spirit of rage, and it kind of spills out into Israel. It's like they hate Israel too, but they just need to be free. Like, I almost see them as victims as well, not just these like angry perpetrators. You know, they need to be set free. So that's we've really been engaging a lot with Palestinian Arab born again believers in the Judea and Samaria area who are going.
And have there been other times when the Israelis come and ask forgiveness? And
yes, absolutely. I mean, you'll have, again, it's most pronounced when you see the soldiers, because the soldiers are obviously seeing the worst of the Palestinians who are throwing rocks at them and whatever, and they get their own, you know, offenses. So absolutely, just a real sweet time of understanding that we're not fighting over land. We are fighting over who will be the dominant God on that land.
Mm. All right, we've got some more time to spend. In fact, I've got an hour and a half more of special guests and interviews and who knows what that we're going to play here as we go on. So any part of the broadcast you missed, just go to my website, askdrbrown.org, and click on latest audio. Be sure to click on latest video to watch the debate that took place on Can You Be Gay and Christian this past Saturday morning, as well as to read my latest article that is relevant to that as well. If you do have a question, we will take some calls at a later 866-348-7884. That's 866-34-TRUTH as we come your way live from Grantham, Pennsylvania. All right, so listen. Go online tonight, all right, starting 7 p.m. Eastern Standard Time, mjaa.org. Is that right? mjaa.org. There will be a live feed from the meeting tonight, a special Israel night celebration. Shani, who's talking to me here, is going to be singing and leading in worship. Ron, who's sitting talking to me here. What are you preaching on tonight, Ron?
He's not sure yet.
I am...
We're out of time. No, go ahead. We're short on time, though.
I'm preaching on the need for revival, that revival is the only hope of seeing all Israel saved.
All right. So listen, friends, I want to encourage you to stand with us. All right, quick question here. How many here have been blessed by my books or material over the years? All right. Everyone that just clapped, you have signed up to join our support team. But I want to encourage you to visit our website and become a monthly supporter, a torchbearer. If you can put aside $1 a day, $30 or more per month, you become a monthly torchbearer. Holding our hands up, we'll send you as a free thank you gift the Tree of Life, Messianic Bible, and every month a new message and material that will pour into you. So go to my website now, Ask Dr. Brown, askdrbrown.org, or call 1-800-278-9978, 1-800-278-9978.
It's The Line of Fire with your host, activist, author, international speaker, and theologian, Dr. Michael Brown. Your voice of moral, cultural, and spiritual revolution. Get into The Line of Fire now by calling 866-34-TRUTH. Here again is Dr. Michael Brown.
This is our land.
Mm-hmm.
Now or later, we will take it.
Would you share it?
Palestine with the Jewish people?
No, we won't.
Why?
It's our land, man.
Because it's for us, not for them. It's just for Palestinian people.
Hey, friends. Welcome to The Line of Fire. We are coming your way live from the Messianic Jewish Alliance of America annual conference in Grantham, Pennsylvania at Messiah College. Go to the website mjaa.org. That's mjaa.org to find out more about the Alliance, to find out more about what's happening in Messianic Jewish circles, and to watch a live stream of the conference tonight where there's going to be wonderful Israeli-led music and powerful preaching. In fact, Ron, I think tonight's message is probably going to be the greatest message in the history of the universe.
Or maybe the greatest message preached at that moment on this campus.
It could be. Could be.
And there, the worst.
I once saw Mad Magazine. I grew up reading Mad Magazine as a kid and then being a New York Jew, so sarcasm was kind of part of me. So there was this little cartoon, a picture, and it had three pizzerias on the block. And there was Gino's Pizzeria, best pizza in the universe. And like two people walking in. Next to that, Mario's Pizzeria, best pizza in the world. And like five people walk in. Next to that, Irving's Pizzeria, and people, you know, storming in. It said, best pizza on the block.
Right.
So, obviously, revival's been something very deep in my heart through the years. You were part of the Brownsville Revival with us, served on the team, and were part of the school. So we were in the midst of outpouring. We know right. What happens when God moves in supernatural ways. On the one hand, I remember, as Shani told me once, that she and her brother Ayal, in the early days, they used to say, what's the Messianic Youth Movement of Israel doing today? Because there's two of them. So God, amazing things have happened, and yet it's still a trickle.
Right.
When you say there must be revival there in order for Israel to be saved, what has to change? What has to happen?
Well, God has to come down. You know, the thing about revival is you can't manufacture it. As a new believer, I used to find it interesting that certain churches would advertise revival. This is our week for revival, but that's not the revival we see in the book of Acts. In the book of Acts, it's a God-ordained thing, not a man-ordained thing. It's upon us to call out to God to send seasons of revival. In 1976, Time magazine asked the question on the front cover, is God dead? Now, at that time, you know, it was during the sexual revolution, drug revolution, and it felt like that. And I thought about that when you were sharing earlier today about the fact of what we need today with everything happening with the
sexual anarchy in society and gay activism, and it looks like it's going down a hill that it can't get back up.
Right. And when God comes down, it changes everything. And in 1967, not only was Jerusalem restored to the Jewish people, but that was the beginning of the Jesus movement. And as we know, most of the leadership in the Messianic movement today came to faith through that revival.
All right. How many of you in the audience here, you are, Jewish or not, you came to faith between the late 60s and early 70s?
Wow.
Just clap if you did. Clap if you did. That's a large number of the people. And Ron, you know what's fascinating? Pollsters in the early 60s, I've been shocked. I only read about this within the last few months. They were saying this is going to be a great generation, very respectful of authority. They don't seem to have much ambition and goals. They just want to have like a nicer job, a nicer home. They got it completely wrong. They didn't see the counterculture revolution coming. And then who saw the Jesus people revolution
right.
coming? And yet God did that.
Yeah, in the same Time magazine in 1973 that asked if God was dead 7 years earlier was now front center on the cover. It talked about the Jesus revolution. So when I look at the Messianic Jewish movement, I think what is our greatest need? It's revival. We need another wave of God's breath to blow on the Jewish people and bring them into the kingdom.
And it's going to happen.
Amen.
It's going to happen. We'll be right back.
Line of Fire with your host, Dr. Michael Brown. Get into the Line of Fire now by calling 866-34-TRUTH. Here again is Dr. Michael Brown.
All right, folks. We're coming away live from the Messianic Jewish Alliance of America, the MJAA. And you can watch the live feed tonight, mjaa.org. Last night's speaker was Tony Perkins from the Family Research Council, so obviously big news with the Hobby Lobby ruling. And as I mentioned earlier today, the ruling was what I expected. I was certainly hoping it would go in that direction. And then the attorneys for Hobby Lobby were upbeat. So the question was, can a business have religious freedoms? Can a business have religious convictions on which it operates? And I saw somebody, I guess kind of a liberal guy that posts a lot on my sites, and I don't, you know, we get tens of thousands of comments every week, so I don't see most of the comments. But he made some statement and said, well, what if you had an Islamic company and they wanted to impose Sharia law on their employees? And I thought, this is a bit over the top. So I replied, I said, so you're saying that being pro-life is equivalent to Sharia law, but that's part of the rhetoric that is out there in terms of the extreme attack and rhetoric. Oh, Jews control. I didn't know that, Matt, that Jews control the Family Research Council. I think Jews control this organization, but it's a Messianic Jewish organization. So that does work. Ron, why should your average American care about Israel? I want you to give a perspective, and then Shani, I want to ask you a question regarding that. But is it just, well, we're supposed to bless Israel and God will bless us, so it's kind of a utilitarian thing, you know, or we learned if we give to Israel, God will really prosper us, so that's is that it? Is it that God will destroy America if America doesn't stand with Israel? I mean, why should your average listener care?
Well, the reason they should care, it's twofold. There's a biblical reason, and then there's a humanitarian reason. The biblical reason, it really is from the Bible. The Bible speaks very clearly about God's hand on Israel. Even in unbelief, God expects that the church, the believers around the world, would bless Israel, going all the way back to Genesis 12, which you just quoted.
Yeah, but how does that, if you bless, you know, Abraham's seed, who says that's Israel?
Well, if you want to get into that, we can take another hour. But who says that Israel? DNA tests prove that the folks who actually live.
Oh, you have DNA of Abraham? Is that what you're claiming now?
I personally don't, but I trust those who say that they do know what the DNA is of the Jewish people going back thousands of years. There was a rumor saying.
I heard it goes back to the Illuminati.
Yes. I believe it is.
And
the
Jewish Masons. Actually, I think Masons control the world and Jewish Masons.
So in answer to your question,
see if I could throw him a little bit.
The Bible speaks very clearly about God favoring Zion. It speaks about the restoration of Israel. The prophets cried out, Tikkun HaOlam. That was their dream. That was their passion, is that God would bring the Jewish people back from all over the world and establish Israel. You know, Great Britain was the best friend of the Jewish people in the early part of the 19th century, and it's no accident that they were the most blessed nation on earth. They had territories all over the earth. They used to say, the sun never sets on the British Empire. However, they turned very sharply against the Jewish people, starting in 1921-22, even throughout the Holocaust, where they would not let Jewish people escaping Germany into what was then called Palestine. And it's interesting because the sun set very quickly on the British Empire. About that time, a guy named Harry S. Truman became the president that was the first to recognize the state of Israel on May 15th, 1948. Israel became a nation. And you look at America today, even with all the things that you shared about today, all the horrible things happening in America, there is still the obvious favor of God on America. And I believe it is connected to blessing Israel as well as being the primary nation sending out the good news all over the world. But then on a humanitarian issue, Israel is the only democracy in the Middle East. Do you know, Dr. Brown, Israel is the only country in the Middle East where an Arab can walk outside of an Israeli Arab, he can go outside, he can curse Netanyahu, he can curse the country, he can spit on the flag, and then he can go inside and be
And he can even be a Knesset member and do
he
that.
He can even be a Knesset member. But try doing that in Syria or Saudi Arabia or in Egypt, and you'll be arrested. So we need a democracy in the Middle East.
Yeah, you know, I was asked by someone who participates at the Christ at the Checkpoint conference which has been very controversial, and many Jewish believers feel that it's terribly imbalanced and does not tell the whole story and skews people against Israel. So a fellow whom I differ with deeply, but I believe he genuinely wants what's best, he asked me if I would speak at the conference if invited. I said, if invited, of course I would. He said, how about you give church history and the persecution of the Jews? In other words, to try to help those on the other side to recognize that Jews have been a persecuted people, because to the Palestinians, they're the monsters. They're the occupiers. They're the Goliaths. And, you know, the Palestinians are the helpless Davids. And from some of their perception, that's accurate in terms of the power balance at the moment. So I said, how about this? How about I speak on radical Islam, the elephant in the room that no one's speaking about? And never heard back after that. Now look, I'm not saying that in a glib way, because I understand that the majority of Palestinians, if you would poll them, would not support the type of violence, say, like this, that Hamas has just done. The majority from the most recent poll said, we just want the land for us. But an even larger majority said, we don't believe that we should use violent means, you know, to get that back. But the fact of the matter is, it's very difficult to speak up. It's very difficult to speak out where you have radical Islam in power and in rulership. So in many ways, the Palestinians are victims of government and bad decisions. And I talked to a gal after I did a debate a few months ago, and it was about Israel and ethics and eschatology and things like that. It was ecclesiology, so who's the real church? Ecclesiology, ethics, eschatology. And at the end of the debate, we're doing Q&A, and there was a Palestinian woman there, and she was someone hostile to Israel and wanted to get her viewpoint out. So afterwards, I went to chat with her. And the more I chatted, she said, oh, the government's completely corrupt. The Palestinian government, she said, they got all the money. Their kids drive around. They're chauffeured around. They go to the best schools. We have nothing. So as long as her side could be heard, once we heard her out and said, yeah, these are genuine issues that need to be examined, she was full of hostility towards the Palestinian leadership and felt it was corrupt and was the big part of the problem. So there's a certain victimhood we have to consider and look at. Shani, in the midst of the body in Israel, from when you were a little girl growing up in Israel, so you've watched things. I don't know how many memories you have when you're really, really little, but you're getting close to, you know, 30 years of memories in the land and stuff. What would be the single biggest differences in terms of how the nation looks at Yeshua and how the nation looks at Jewish believers within the land?
Well, I would say that growing up, my school experience was similar to that. If you can imagine going to school and telling everyone that you believe in aliens and like your family believes in aliens. And so you have friends.
Real quick, how many believe in aliens here?
Yeah.
Okay.
That's pretty much the reaction I got. It's like, okay, we'll be your friend even though you believe in aliens. That's, if aliens brought us out of Egypt, okay. So that was basically the reaction that I got. I was very enthusiastically evangelistic in my younger years, and I remember getting pulled out of class by the principal, who wanted clarification on what in the world I was talking about being born twice and all that, because it sounds really, really weird in Hebrew. But so that was pretty much the experience. You would have a few people every year that would be saved in the country, and everybody knew who it was because it was like one or two people, and, you know, Shavuot, the Feast of Fruits would come, and we'd be like, that's the, you know, Joseph up north. Yeah, he stuck it out 6 months already. So it was just, we were very excited about any step. And there is such a dramatic change when I look back, even though it's been very, very steady, of even being aware that there is the option of believing in Yeshua and being Jewish. That concept was the alien thing I was telling you before. It would be like me telling you, yeah, you can be a Christian and Muslim, you know, but of course. So the mentality is much more curious, much more like, okay, you guys are a little slightly, I'm not sure I get it, but I'm willing to actually listen, which may seem like nothing to you guys, but it's a...
And I remember years back when I was in Israel, it was right after a newspaper had released this article about the Messianic Jews, and even the picture angles were strange.
Like green and...
Right, everything. But there's much more appreciation. I mean, there's still some of that,
right.
But there's much more appreciation for you guys just being regular citizens or regular Jews or what? How would you say?
Right. I actually went into the grocery store the other day, and the guard, every store and entrance has a guard with a, you know, metal detector in it. But the two guards were talking to each other, and they were trying to say Brit Chadasha, the New Testament. And the guy was trying to figure out how to say it because he'd heard it somewhere. And just like the fact that they were actually dialoguing about the New Testament was like, oh my goodness, someone's actually talking. They didn't, like, the two of them didn't know what it was, but they were both like talking about it. So,
amazing.
You know, there was a recent story of a Messianic Jewish soldier who was in an officer's training course where they have to all listen to each other, share about their lives. An Orthodox Jew would not go listen to him. He was kicked out of the course.
Whoa, amazing. Go to mjaa.org. Tune in for the live feed, 7 p.m. Eastern Standard tonight.
It's the Line of Fire with your host, Dr. Michael Brown, your voice of moral, cultural, and spiritual revolution. Here again is Dr. Michael Brown.
It's important for us to send a message to Hamas. It's a terror organization. They fire thousands of rockets at our cities. They dispatch scores of suicide bombers to blow up our buses and pizza parlors and cafes. And they perpetrated this crime. Members of Hamas perpetrated this crime, the kidnapping and execution of three teenage boys. It's important for Israel to send a message to Hamas that this is completely unacceptable and we won't tolerate it.
That was the voice of Israeli Ambassador to the U.S., Ron Dermer, on Fox News. And this is your listener-sponsored voice of moral, cultural, and spiritual revolution. Coming away live from the Messianic Jewish Alliance of America conference. You can watch the live feed of the Israel Night meeting tonight, mjaa.org. And so I'm broadcasting live. We're in the Messiah College in a fine arts room or something like that. I've got my portable radio unit. I travel with this around the world. I've done radio 3 to 5 in the morning from Hong Kong, or midnight to 2 in the morning from India, or 12:30 to 2:30 from India. So we're set up here in Pennsylvania. We've got different guests and friends that we're talking to. And an old friend, again, from many, many years. It's scary how many old friends we have.
30
now,
years.
Starting to look it, too. I mean, both ways. Both ways.
Yeah, something like
that. Yeah, when I look in the mirror, I'm always surprised. So somebody posted a picture of me with some quote, and it really looked like this old grandfatherly kind of professor guy. And I said to Nancy, I said, look at that picture. She said, that's what you look like. But anyway, I'm sitting with Dave Schneier, Dave and Leslie. His wife Leslie have been friends for many years. Both lawyers, both left their careers to go on the mission field and serve for years in Ukraine and then in France. And now a very logical place to be based to do Jewish ministry in Europe. You are now based in Alabama.
Birmingham,
yeah,
Alabama.
That great Jewish metropolis. Dave, you were in Ukraine when things exploded. What happened?
We just finished a leadership conference there, and a block from our hotel, pro-Russian people got into a shooting match with local Odessans. And before a day was out, 50 people had died, many of them shot, most of them burned to death in a building that they took over. And so we were hearing this gunfire and stun grenades, and we were right in the middle of it.
What was the atmosphere prior to that as you lived in Ukraine in terms of anti-Semitism?
Well, anti-Semitism is like generic there. It's part of the culture. One of the founding guys of Ukraine, he conducted a massacre of the Jewish people in the 1600s there, probably the second largest Holocaust ever. And so that's filtered down to the people on one side. And on the other side, churches sing Jewish songs that you and I know because it's part of their culture. So you have both things going on at the same time.
And what about the Messianic Jewish movement in Ukraine?
Well, it's awesome. It's as close to revival as I've seen anywhere. And I oversee 18 congregations in Ukraine of various sizes. 8 were in Crimea, which just became a different country because Putin invaded. Mm-hmm. And so it's going really well. And the thing is, they don't have anything there. And you've been to places where that's like. And so the relationship of the believers is unbelievable. And so it's an awesome time, the Messianic movement in Ukraine.
What about the memory of Bobby Yar and the horror that took place there?
Well, it's interesting because there is a strong memory of that.
And 100,000 killed?
I think it was 60,000, but just shot in a ravine in Kiev. But also, Stalin starved to death or killed 7 million Ukrainian farmers because they wouldn't join cooperative farms. And so, and Russia denies that it ever happened. So they have both things going there.
Extraordinary. Now, what about France? How long were you in France for?
6 years in France. It was a rough posting. We lived in the center of Paris, so that was kind of difficult. But
Okay. Seriously, though, aside from Paris not being, you know, terribly impoverished, obviously everything's expensive there and
right.
so on, but what was the spiritual atmosphere like in Paris?
Well, the Messianic movement, there's two congregations there. The largest churches there are North African based churches that people came as immigrants. But in terms of Jewish anti-Semitism in France, 2006, Muslim gang called the Barbarians tortured to death for days, tortured, and then the guy finally died. A Jewish man, just because he was Jewish, and they thought they would get a big ransom for him. And at the trial, when they convicted them, the head of the gang said, "It's better to be a lion one day than a lamb for your lifetime." So he thought that was a very courageous thing. 14 guys taking on one Jewish guy.
And what about the attitude of the French people in general as they see Islam rising in their country? Is there concern?
They're nervous. There was a lot of brouhaha about the Muslims praying in the streets and blockading the streets, which is illegal in France. And so,
and then the ruling about not wearing a veil, and that was
that, you know, the police, you know, you can get a fine for that, but they're reluctant to enforce it. But in France, and I just want to say in Europe, the level of anti-Semitism is off the charts now, and it's filtered down to comedy acts where guys tell jokes like, "I want to apologize to all the fleas who happened to die on Jewish bodies in concentration camps," and that's on television. You know, here you'd be fired immediately.
Yeah.
Or I want to say Merry Christmas to all my Jewish friends, but I can't because they killed Jesus. That's on the airwaves.
In 1 minute or less, because we're at the end of this segment. Aside from Satan being behind it, why such a level of Jew hatred?
It's in your book, Our Hands Are Stained with Blood. The history of Europe has been to condemn the Jews. They killed Jesus and they're infidels, and Luther
but
said...
But, I mean, they're hardly Christian, though. There's so many that are just nominal, and yet it's still in their blood.
You're talking about 18 centuries of anti-Semitism just growing and growing and growing. And the Messianic movement, we're a voice against that.
Yeah. And it's important. If folks want to find out what you're doing in ministry, is there a website to go to?
Yes, blog. closeupsfromfaraway.blogspot.com.
All right, tell you what, just write to my website.
Yes, you better.
That guy from Europe, how do we get in touch with him? and we'll tell you, just click on contact on AskDrBrown.org. Hey, friends, in all seriousness, by God's grace, we really are on the front lines. And I was just chatting with someone earlier today who said that wherever he goes across the country, do I get this quote right, Brian, that all the believers you talk to, they all talk about the radio show?
And
need more of it.
Yes.
Okay, so friends, partner with us. Hold our hands up together as we are on the front lines. Become a Torchbearer monthly supporter so together we can make a difference. We're about to release our new Real Messiah website for Jewish outreach, and by God's grace, you can help amplify my voice to the nation. So call now 1-800-278-9978, 1-800-278-9978, or go to my website, AskDrBrown, askdrbrown.org. My bottom line today, as we see what's happening with anti-Semitism in Europe and worldwide and see the level of hostility and anger, we know that all the more will God rise up in power and goodness and work and act. We are coming your way live from the Messianic Jewish Conference in Pennsylvania. You don't want to miss a moment of what's coming next.
It's time for The Line of Fire with your host, activist, author, international speaker, and theologian, Dr. Michael Brown, your voice of moral, cultural, and spiritual revolution. Michael Brown is the director of the Coalition of Conscience and president of Fire School of Ministry. Get into The Line of Fire now by calling 866-34-TRUTH. That's 866-34-TRUTH. Here again is Dr. Michael Brown.
All right, now this is a real live audience here.
All right.
Sometimes I have done in years past TV shows, and they don't have a live audience. And when you come on, they have, you know, canned applause. And one time, you know, they said, you know, when it comes on, you're supposed to make believe you're clapping, but you don't actually touch the hand. So when the camera came to me, I just glared at it because I didn't like that. But you are here live, right? Just make some noise. All right.
It's a great story.
All right. You'll find out who this other voice is in a moment. But we are coming away from the Messianic Jewish Alliance Conference, an annual conference in Grantham, Pennsylvania, held at Messiah College. I'm sitting with Joel Chernoff, General Secretary, CEO, one of the pioneer family members of the movement here, the MJAA. You can watch the live feed tonight. It's going to be a special Israel night. Great worship, great message. So go to mjaa.org, mjaa.org. Joel, how many years have you been doing this now?
Doing this.
This conference.
Conference, I have been here 40 years. Of course, I started very, very young, but I was here for 40 years. This is my 40th conference.
Wow. All right.
Can you believe that?
Are you serious? Now, you don't remember this.
No, I probably don't.
But you and Rick were doing a concert in New York City many years ago.
Oh, yeah. I
think it was called
this.
Lamb's Chapel, something like that, in the city.
Okay.
But so they're wonderful Messianic Jewish worship group. So I was there. So at the end of it, I came up to you with my Hebrew Bible and just opened it. I think you had sung, you know, something in Hebrew, so I just opened it, and I said, can you read this with a smile? And you said, for God so loved the world. You quoted John 3:16.
It's a great story, Mike. I'm telling you.
Just with a smile. Joel, tell me about the Joseph Warehouse in Israel. I only knew a little bit about this. As I've been hearing more about it, I've been stunned by the size and scope of it.
Mm-hmm. The Joseph Project is... Today, it's a big story, but I mean, today it is probably the largest humanitarian society there in the country. We're probably the biggest in terms of the space that we rent and service, about 34,000, 35,000 square feet. Also, the volume of aid coming into the country is the largest, and the value of the aid also.
Now,
annually.
You work with other organizations in Israel?
Yes.
They know you're a Messianic Jew?
Yes.
All right, so how does that work? What kind of agencies are you working with?
Well, there's about 40 independent Messianic groups on the ground, and every single hospital in the country, the IDF, orphanages, Holocaust centers, on and on. Everybody, it's about 250,000 people up to that number now are being touched and affected.
Extraordinary.
Yeah.
So, I mean, this is as mainstream as can be.
This is mainstream.
And obviously, when you care about people, that speaks louder than words, doesn't it?
Oh, absolutely. You know, if they see you coming, Mike, every time that they see you coming, you have got a $50 bill for them. They're going to like to see you coming, aren't they?
Yeah. All right. A lot of us think of Israel. We think of the tourism industry.
Yeah.
We think
mm-hmm.
of how it's grown up in the desert, in the wilderness, all this. Yet there's a lot of need there.
Yeah. I mean, poverty is the number one domestic challenge there. It's about 30% of the people living below the poverty line. 40% of the children below the poverty line. It's kind of shocking, really.
Extraordinary. Listen, we're going to bring some guests on in a moment, a Christian couple that God burdened to help Israel with, and they've made an extraordinary donation that's helped you get into a massive, massive facility. In fact, they're going to be honored tonight at the meeting.
That's so true.
I'm eager to hear about it. If folks want to know about this project, where do they go online?
www.mjaa.org.
All right, so same place where you
same
can go.
Place.
Same place to watch the live feed, mjaa.org. You're about to hear a terrific story. After that, we're going to take your questions right here on The Line of Fire.
Send it, Lord. It's The Line of Fire with your host, Dr. Michael Brown. Get into The Line of Fire now by calling 866-34-TRUTH. Here again is Dr. Michael Brown.
All right, there we go. There we go. All right, just trying to time the applause properly here. What a neat live audience we have as we're broadcasting live from the Messianic Jewish Alliance of America, their annual conference. I didn't realize it was this many years it's been going on, but this is the first time I've ever done live radio. The reason that I can't teach the yeshiva courses in the afternoon here, but the bad news is I can't. The good news, you get better people like Michael Redelnik and others who do get to teach them. We're going to hear from Michael in a minute, so let's have a hand for Michael. All right. We're gonna play Stump the Doctor, and you're gonna try to stump one of us with a question in a little bit. But it's because of my live radio show 2 hours a day that I can't teach the classes, but delighted to be able to share the radio show with you. We just heard about the Joseph Project in Israel. Joel Chernoff has been working on this for so many years, and I was only learning about some of the dimensions, the size, the scope of it earlier today. I knew of it, I didn't know how big it was and how deeply entrenched it was throughout Israel. My guests now, Joe and Cindy Gregory, have been involved as a Christian couple with a business, a private business, and a burden to help the Jewish people. So we'll only be able to hear from you one at a time. I'll have to pass the mic. But Joe and Cindy, welcome to The Line of Fire.
Thank you, Dr. Brown.
All right, there you go. So, Joe, you and Cindy definitely don't have Jewish blood, correct? As far as you know.
Oh, I have a stepfather who was Jewish.
But that's not bloodline,
yeah,
though, right?
Yeah, that's
okay.
Yeah.
How did you get a burden to stand with Israel in a substantial way?
Well, let me begin first by saying what a double blessing it is for my wife Cindy and I to be here today, not only to join with our Messianic brothers and sisters in this conference, but also to be on your radio show today,
Dr. Brown. Oh, well, thank you.
Brown.
It's my honor. Thank you, really.
Yeah. I think for Cindy and myself, you know, it was first in obedience to God's word, and then to try and join in with God's work. And my wife is such an exceptional Bible scholar. I've given her several PhDs in Bible.
All right, good. Thank you.
She teaches a ladies' Bible study for 15, 16 years now. And I've learned not to debate her on the Bible because she can quote scriptural circles around me. But
now I've learned just not to debate my wife on anything, basically.
Yeah.
Just concede earlier is the better way, because she's probably right.
So it was, you know, obedience to God's word and trying to join in His work. And our heart, our hope is in God's eternal promises, and, you know, trying to be involved in His eternal plan. And we've come to understand that God's eternal plan for mankind is through the Jewish people. And so, you know, we used to, I know in your book, Holy Fire, you talk about the importance of repentance and revival.
Yeah.
And we used to pray for repentance and revival, spiritual revival and an awakening in this country. And we've come to realize an even more foundational and important prayer is to pray for the spiritual revival and the restoration of Israel.
Right, and as that happens, Romans 11, it brings life from the dead for the entire world.
So if you have a heart, so we've come to have a heart for Israel. And if you have a heart for Israel, you have to pray for the salvation of Israel. And through that, we understand God's ultimate plan is to not only have that, you know, breathing of a spiritual awakening and revival in the land of Israel, but also a breathing and revival in the Christian church and in the world.
Yes.
And so, you know, we've come to understand that and tried to work hard at trying to find ways that we can be involved with God's eternal plan there. And one of the, obviously, the in our opinion, the most foundational, valid, redeemed community of God is the Messianic Jewish community.
The Israel within Israel.
Yes.
Just like the first disciples, where it all starts.
And so we joined with our key leadership here at MJAA at trying to understand what they were trying to accomplish, what was the strategy, and we've become believers in that. And one of the ways that we feel like we can help support the effort that they're doing is through this Joseph Project.
Tremendous. Now, Cindy, tell us about studying the Word and how studying Scripture got you more focused on standing with Israel and the Jewish people, because what perhaps was taken for granted by believers as I was growing up in the Lord, where there was more of, in the evangelical church, more of an appreciation for Israel, recognizing, boy, this is God. It seems that some of the old attitudes are rising up in other church circles, and people are questioning whether Israel's really fulfilling a prophecy, or that's that, you know, some ethnic superiority or God showing favoritism. You know, I just say, hey, it's God keeping his word. That's all we're talking about, God's integrity. But how is it that your own study of Scripture led you to have this burden?
I became saved when I was young, and I realized only a few years ago that all my life, as I read Scripture, I always had a love for God's Word. I had a love for God's people, and I thought all Christians did. And I think they do in part, but I really did. And then recently, I've been leading a ladies' Bible study about 18 years in our home, and they allowed me to pick any topic I want. We just finished a four-year study of all the writing prophets in chronological
four
order.
Four years? You're serious?
It took us four years.
Did you use my Jeremiah commentary for Jeremiah? All right.
I did all my own stuff. You know, I did use a variety of commentaries.
I can help a little bit.
I didn't even know yours existed. I needed to find yours.
Okay.
Yeah.
We'll get
it
to you.
In doing all that, especially this, well, I've always had an interest. I always believed exactly what Scripture said, but doing this Bible study has made a huge difference. And researching the prophets, it's huge. It's all right there. It's plain. What God was saying is plain. He has not stopped.
Well, how do you know that it's, look, the Bible's a spiritual book. How do you know that it's not spiritually fulfilled in the church now? So Israel had its role. Messiah came into the world, kind of passed the baton to the church now. Israel missed its opportunity. The baton's been passed to the church. The church is the true Israel now. And you're looking at kind of the old remnant. How do you respond to that?
Two ways. One
now,
is,
see, I knew she was good. I knew that's a serious question. She didn't flinch. I was watching the body language, no fear in the eyes. So I took you seriously on that and set her up. But you have to know your answer to answer. Go ahead.
Okay. First of all, he says plainly in the Old Testament, I will put my spirit in you. There was a lot of failure in the Old Testament era, a lot of failure. Mm-hmm. But he said, the day will come when I will put my spirit in you. He wasn't talking about just Gentiles.
Mm-hmm.
He was talking to his people.
Right.
I will put my spirit in you, and Gentiles will enter as well. But he was talking to Israel. And when he says something, he follows through with it, with what he says. But the number one reason is to stand behind his name.
Mm-hmm.
Everything that he said would happen to his people, his name was standing behind it.
Yep.
When they were not in the land, he grieved for his name's sake. What on earth, how can all these promises then transfer to Gentiles? What about his name?
Exactly. So it would mean that he's not trustworthy.
Exactly.
It would mean that I bequeath on you all these blessings and wonderful things no matter what happens. And then I don't like you something you do, and I just now designate someone else, Joe and Cindy.
Exactly. But the promises that are there are obviously and easy to read that they are for the nation of Israel.
Yeah, great answer. And, of course, I'm totally with you on that. Joe, obviously you do what you do to the before the Lord, and you're not doing it for publicity. But because people know that you've stood together and your generosity has now helped in a massive way, I mean, made this possible to get this tremendous warehouse, which is, you know, massive expansion. Again, I was just staggered by the level of what could be housed in this. Just talk to our listeners about your own experience as a Christian businessman. Generosity, giving sacrificially, blessing Israel. Has it worked out in your own life? Have you seen scriptural promises come to pass?
Well, absolutely. I've seen so many blessings come to us since we've been involved with the Messianic Jewish Alliance of America and the Joseph Project, which has been about 4 years now. We have to apologize for that. We're kind of late to the party, but, you know,
Come in with quite a splash, so it works out.
Yeah.
It works out.
Yeah. And, you know, I don't try to make such a big deal about it. You know, the greatest thing that God's done for us is he's brought us from very humble beginnings, so it's not hard for us to realize where it all comes from. And we give out of our abundance, but we see so many people out here in the audience who give out of their need, as Messiah talked about, which is an even greater deal to him. But all of us doing our part is going to be important. I sense a real urgency to what we're doing. You know, we can see that hard times are coming for the nation of Israel and what's happening around it and even what happened this week.
And, yes.
And so we just feel the urgency to move now in a big way to do this strategic work. And it really is strategic. You know, on so many levels, I can understand from talking with the leadership of MJAA just how strategic this effort is in the nation of Israel, for not only just for showing that Christians are standing arm in arm with our Messianic brothers and sisters, not just in terms of the government of Israel seeing how the Messianics in the land are being able to work, but on so many other levels that's just extremely strategic what we're doing.
Yeah, and you know, just to repeat this, everybody does their part. Just find out what your part is, and we're responsible to God for that. All right, we will be right back, right here on the Line of Fire.
Give us strength to always do what's right.
It's the Line of Fire with your host, Dr. Michael Brown, your voice of moral, cultural, and spiritual revolution. Here again is Dr. Michael Brown.
All right, we are live in Grantham, Pennsylvania at Messiah College, the annual Messianic Jewish Alliance of America conference. I've had different guests sitting in with me, some friends from Israel and different parts of America, and now a dear friend and colleague, Michael Rodelnik. Michael and I have prepared all of 0 seconds for what we're going to talk about, because Michael has his own radio show and is also a professor and a talker. So, Michael, welcome to the broadcast.
It's good to be here. Thank you.
Before we start, I just want to put Edward on the phone from Englehart, Ontario, Canada. Edward, did you just want to give a shout-out to everybody here at the conference?
Yeah, yes, I did. Can you hear me?
Yeah, go ahead. Shout out, man. We can hear you.
I love you guys. I'm Jewish through my mother. I wish I was there. I'm so excited that Ari Sokram is there, and Shani and Ron. I love you guys. I've been getting the Ma'oz newsletter for over 20 years. I only recently heard about the MJAA. I'm so excited to find out there's a family of Jewish people who love Yeshua as their Messiah, and I so much want to be a part of you. Thank you, Dr. Brown.
All right, give a shout out to Edward there. Thank you, sir, for calling.
Right on.
All right. Michael, how many years have you been doing tours to Israel?
Oh, I don't know, about 97. When that was my first action. I'd been to Israel many times, but I started leading tours in 1997, so I guess about 17, 18 years.
All right, and you've been hosting mainly Christians going over, some Messianic Jews, but...
I started with students.
Okay.
You know, I was a college professor. I would take students from Moody Bible Institute, where I teach, and then their parents started to want to come, and so I took a lot of Jewish believers from Jewish studies, and then their parents, but then some Gentile Christian students and also Gentile Christian parents wanted to come. And next thing you know, it's mostly the parents now.
All right. Now what about the attitude in the churches that traveled in, evangelical churches? You've spoken a lot around. You've got all these students coming into Moody. You interact with a lot of Christian leaders. You take folks on tours. What's happened in terms of the attitude of the church in America towards Israel over these years that you've been doing tours?
Well, the people that go on my tour come usually as a blank slate, and they don't know what to think about Israel. But they usually come away with a very positive view. But what I've noticed among the students that I have at school and places I go speak is that there's a growing distancing from support of Israel, a concern that Israel perhaps isn't as noble and righteous as we used to think. I'll hear things like that. And there's a great deal of criticism of Israel. And I think it's propaganda, mostly, that has really caught on, and particularly with millennials, the younger generation, who are concerned for social justice, rightly so. They believe that Israel somehow, they've heard a lot of propaganda, and therefore Israel is somehow oppressive. And certainly the Palestinians live rough lives. I think that the problem isn't Israel so much as their own leadership that has oppressed them. But nevertheless, that's why I see a shift away from Israel and a real reluctance, not just politically, but to say, well, the Bible doesn't really teach that the land of Israel belongs to the people of Israel. Rather, it belongs to the church.
Yeah. So where in the world does that come from? So the church is the new Israel.
Yeah.
And therefore, so here's the strange thing. The church is the new Israel, so Israel is not a physical thing, it's a spiritual thing. But when it comes to the physical land, that belongs to the spiritual people?
Well, yeah, and not only that, but the land isn't the land of Israel, it's the whole earth.
Right. So yes. If it's the whole earth, then let everybody have the whole earth, let Israel have a little piece.
Exactly,
there,
right?
So it is, it's a strange kind of thing.
It's a strange thing. I think that it comes down to interpretive method, that one of the things that I see is that those who hold to this kind of replacement, they don't want to call it replacement, but what it is replacement theology. They start in the New Testament and then read back into the Hebrew Bible. When I think us, and I think we'd agree on this, that we start with the Hebrew Bible and then we come to the New, and then we read the New in light of what the Hebrew Bible says. And as a result, it's not that there isn't a church. Of course we believe there's a church. But that God still has faithful promises to Israel.
Got it. Yeah, so we'll sort some of those things out. If you have questions here, part of our live audience, we'll be taking some questions. And I just want to grab one quick phone call. Since we're in Pennsylvania, let's go to Shoshana in Pittsburgh, Pennsylvania. Yes, your comment or question, please.
Hello. How are you?
Oh, we're great. How's everybody?
Everybody is
all right. They're still here in full force, doing well.
I'll be brief because I know your time is short, and I do not want to put a stumbling block before the blind. So I just want to let you know I'm an Orthodox Jew. And as we're talking about anti-Semitism and the elephant in the room and radical Islam, I was wondering, since your movement has such an opportunity to work with churches in the United States, to work with churches where we're in diaspora, what are you doing to help us in diaspora when it comes to anti-Semitism? Because I can't walk into a Walmart with a headscarf without having some sort of snicker behind my back from a Christian.
Yeah, well, it's probably not a Christian. It's someone who may attend a church. But Shoshana, thank you for calling and raising this. The book that I've written that has been translated into more languages than any book and that has been continuously in print since 92 is called Our Hands Are Stained with Blood, The Tragic Story of the Church and the Jewish People. Just wondering how many here in the audience have read that book? Just hands going up all over. Shoshana, it's a book that talks about anti-Semitism in church history. It talks about how some of the so-called great leaders of the church sinned grievously against the Jews, including Martin Luther at the end of its life. It talks about the beauty that's found in traditional Judaism in the midst of our differences. It talks about anti-Semitic lies and exposing them. Michael Rydelnik written a book on the Mideast conflict. What's the title of that
Understanding
book?
The Arab-Israeli conflict, the headlines haven't told you.
Right, and that lays out issues for the church to understand. So we are constantly working to help the church understand God's purposes for Israel, to understand the history of anti-Semitism. And Shoshana, if you'd like, I would gladly send you a copy of the book. We won't keep your name on a list or anything. So you can let
I respect that. I do, and I thank you greatly. I'm aware of that. I just thought you guys have a golden opportunity. You know, if we're talking about the radical Islam versus the Muslims that don't have an axe to grind, when we're talking about Christians versus those who don't, Jews who do and don't, it just listening to your show, I felt that you are sort of a nucleus in which you can let these churches know, and as well as Islam know, that, look, we are in diaspora. We have pluralism in this country. And if we're about God and we're about love, that and loving our neighbor, then we also have to understand, and I would think the Messianic Jewish community would totally understand this because I see many who look just like my Orthodox friends, that when we go out and we are dressed to express, that doesn't make us some stereotype, and it doesn't make us, because we wear a headscarf, a jihadist wife. It doesn't make us, because we don't wear a cross or we do wear a cross, that we are Westboro Baptist Church. You know, that you guys sort of seem like you've got your hands in all of the areas to be able to pull a conference together and explain to people it's bad in Israel. What just happened to our boys is horrible in Israel, but it's still happening here.
Yeah, so Shoshana, let me just say this. We are doing it. Even my Thoroughly Jewish Thursday broadcast, we hit on these issues constantly. I wrote a national article last week on an Israel-bashing reverend from England, and the Messianic Jewish movement is on the forefront of this very, very thing. So we're with you. Thank you.
It's The Line of Fire with your host, activist, author, international speaker, and theologian, Dr. Michael Brown.
your voice of moral, cultural, and spiritual revolution. Get into the line of fire now by calling 866-34-TRUTH. Here again is Dr. Michael Brown.
Hey, it is a real joy to do this. We did live radio with our tour group in Israel in May. That was a little different. We were all squeezed into different locations and different settings. We didn't have room for all these people and have it mic'd like this. So we did this at the American Bible Society in Manhattan in January, but this is a much nicer setting in terms of a bigger room, and so glad to have all of you here. We'll take some audience questions in a little while. Any tough ones, I will turn over to Michael Rydelnik here. So we'll do it with double confidence. 866-34-TRUTH if you want to call in, 866-348-7884. Michael, you've got an important new book that's just come out. Before we get to that, I'm just looking at some headlines. France's Jewish community is shaken following a string of violent anti-Semitic attacks over the past month that's prompting thousands of Jews to seek to move to Israel. We had on in the last hour Dave Schneier, who's been involved in Ukraine and France for years now, lived in France for years, talking about the rising tide of anti-Semitism in Europe. Another headline I'm looking at, in Iraq, the Assyrian television channel Ishtar TV is reporting that five Assyrians have gone missing in Mosul. Two Chaldean nuns from the Daughters of Mary Order, as well as three others, have not been heard from nearly 2 days, so apparently kidnapped. And then in Jerusalem right now, with the funeral of the boys who were found, you say, well, they were just found. Yeah, but in Jewish law, you're going to bury within 24 hours unless it's the Sabbath. So it's trauma added to trauma. The demonstrators are protesting against what they call the government's helplessness and are calling for an extensive military operation in response to the killing of the three teenagers. So it's a very, very volatile situation. And on a certain level, Michael, that's always the reality in the spiritual realm. This is a real battleground.
It's this battleground, and it's obviously that there are attacks. And I think when you see anti-Semitism on the rise, that is always a spiritual issue. When you read Revelation 12, which describes the future tribulational attack on the Jewish people, the one behind it is the dragon, the devil.
Yeah.
And so I think that whenever you see this, any rise of anti-Semitism, there's all sorts of cultural explanations and sociological explanations we can give, but ultimately there's a theological explanation.
Right. Now, theological explanation means we go to the Word for our answers. You've just been involved in a really important project with important theological implications and important Israel implications. Tell us about that.
Just this past February, the Moody Bible Commentary, a one-volume commentary on the whole Bible, was released. I had the real privilege of being not just a contributor, but a co-editor. So
that's a big project.
Everything came through my fingertips. It was 30 faculty members from Moody wrote this commentary on the whole Bible. It's about 2,500 pages long. And it covers every book, every verse of the Bible. Now, what I think is unique about this commentary is it's one of the few commentaries you can pick up from Genesis to Revelation that doesn't have anything about criticizes but no affirmation of replacement theology. It is really as a school, we're committed to the idea that God will be faithful to Israel. It's also very sensitive to any kind of Jewish issues that come up, which I think is really an important part of this commentary. And also, there's a real trend today to minimize the messianic prophecies of the Old Testament, and this commentary makes clear that they were indeed messianic, pointing to the Jewish Messiah, Jesus.
Yeah, because normally when you have a joint project, you'll have certain basic theological guidelines, but then certain level of diversity for the different contributors. So here you have the diversity in terms of different personalities, insights, etc., but a cohesive theological whole, which is massively important. All right, what's the name of it again?
It's called the Moody Bible Commentary,
and
it's produced by Moody Bible Institute's faculty. And, of course, you know the famous motto for Moody Publishers, the name you can trust. So we put that name right in the commentary.
Excellent. All right, it's available now?
Available now, yes, the Moody Bible Commentary. And at the conference, those of you who are here, it will be at the marketplace.
And ask Michael to sign the beginning of each chapter. There you go. All right, we'll be right back.
God of light, hear our cry, send the fire.
It's The Line of Fire with your host, Dr. Michael Brown, your voice of moral, cultural, and spiritual revolution. Here again is Dr. Michael Brown.
All right, we are here live. We are really live, right? This is not canned applause. The real people will post some pictures later, show you the live audience here at the Messianic Jewish Alliance of America, the annual conference in Grantham, Pennsylvania, held at Messiah College. I'm here with my guest, Michael Rudelnik. He's a professor, heads up the Jewish Studies Department at Moody Bible Institute. He's an author, very important book on Messianic prophecy. He's written as well as on Middle East conflict, and now just one of the editors on the Moody Bible Commentary, which is awesome. And you have your own radio show, Saturdays,
yeah.
What time?
Saturday mornings, 9 to 11 Central Time on Moody Radio. It's across about 200 stations, and if you don't get Moody Radio in your neighborhood, you can always get the Moody Radio app for free. Just go to your app store and download that, and you can listen to not just Open Line with Michael Rudelnik, but also many great Moody Radio programs.
Except between 2 and 4, Monday to Friday. We actually have an app that blocks every other app during those 2 hours. All right, before we go to some questions that have been presented to us, let's just take a call. Laura in Fort Lee, New Jersey, welcome to the Line of Fire. What's your question or comment?
My comment is, the Israelis have a PR problem. Not once did I ever hear all these years that the incitement from the Palestinian media to kill Jews, 24/7, it's in their media, their books, their mosques, their schools. Never did I ever hear that on American media, TV, or in Europe, that explaining, this is, how do you want us to make peace with these Palestinian terrorists that are inciting their children age 3 and 4 to kill us Jews? It's in their media. They don't have to stop that, and they can send rockets. And this is unbelievable. It defies logic, like I always say. And you know what? I blame Obama for this incitement and John Kerry. The two anti-Semites, especially the State Department.
All right. Tell you what, Laura, appreciate you being candid with your feelings there. Does Israel have a PR problem?
I think they do have Israel as a nation has a PR problem, and I think we need to do something to help about that. I think it's our responsibility all the time to speak up and to be advocates for Israel in a really reasonable and rational way. Not getting angry or making attacks, but just to explain what's going on. I think that most of the problems today is that people don't know really what's going on. And I think the greatest problem is that people want to be compassionate. And so my wife always says that the advocacy that you hear today, it's a lie wrapped in a cloak of compassion.
Yeah.
Because we see so much compassion for the suffering of the Palestinians, but the bottom line lie somehow attacks Israel.
Yeah, and it's what I see the same thing in terms of in our society, say, with gay activism, that the younger generation, they care about justice. They don't want to see people bullied. You know, so here's a kid at school. He's a nice kid. He says he's gay. He gets bullied. You're going to side with him. Hey, why shouldn't he be able to marry? But you don't look at the larger issue and what happens when you redefine marriage. So here you get Christ at the checkpoint. These evil Israelis look at this giant wall. It's hurting our, you know, it's hurting our business, hurting our family. We're getting harassed. It's the evil Israelis. So you look at the micro thing and not say, okay, there's a barrier to keep murderers out.
Exactly.
And then look at a larger history. Yeah.
It's we want to be compassionate, but I think the most compassionate way we can be towards the Palestinians is to help them to abandon support for terror, because their lives would be so much better.
Yeah.
So, but nevertheless, I think you're right. And we stood at that wall and we read this together. We read what was written on it, and we thought, people don't understand. This isn't to keep people locked in. The purpose of the barrier is to keep terrorists out.
Right. And the idea that if we know there are murderers coming in, I mean, the terrorism is going down dramatically since that was put up. A lot of Israelis don't like it being there. It's 97% fence and 3% wall.
Yeah.
But the whole idea, it's a land grab and look at the way it goes. And
Ariel Sharon, he was the one that authorized it. He didn't want a wall. He didn't want a barrier. 97% fence, as you say.
Yeah. All right. There was a question that we were asked in the break. Many people in the church are shocked when they hear about the history of anti-Semitism. I've talked about these issues in different countries. It was pointed out to me that I said that My book, Her Hands Are Stained with Blood, has been translated into more languages than
any other book
I wrote. Not than any other book, okay? Than any other book that I wrote. But in point of fact, I've seen it as I've spoken on these things in different countries, or people have read the book in different countries. They're shocked. Christians are shocked in Asia and Africa. They had no clue that this happened. A lot of it is a kind of an Anglo history. When I came to faith, I was given a book to read by a rabbi about anti-Semitism in church history. You grow up, Michael, you experienced some. Mm-hmm. I really didn't. You and your brother in Jewish schools, you experienced more than I did. But Christians hear about it, they're shocked. And they want to reach Jewish people. Is it right to apologize? Is it on an interpersonal level? Let's say a Jewish person brings it up as you're witnessing. What would you say?
Well, I think that it's really hard to hold a person responsible today for actions that they did not commit. But there is a certain solidarity that every follower of Yeshua has, a follower of Jesus, with the church at large. And so we can say, I personally never would have participated or done anything like this. But because of that association, I am so grieved and sorrowful for what was done. It's not because I don't think any person could take personal responsibility for actions they did not commit, but they can identify and say, because I am associated with this institution that did commit these acts, I am grievously sorry. And I think that's the only way to approach it.
Yeah, and tell me if you agree with this principle, if you'd add or subtract to it. I say it's appropriate to apologize for something from the past if the wound remains open or the sin continues. So, you know, if someone finds out 41 generations ago that my uncle stole something from your uncle's friend's neighbor, you know, and we have to research the history to find, that's different. But when you have the fact that you still have replacement theology, which opened the door to this, even though there are folks who believe in it who are not anti-Semites today, the fact that there's still so much anti-Semitism in the world, and so the wound remains.
The wound is there, and it's still prevalent that you can find it. So a person, that's why I think a person can't personally, I agree with you 100% on that, but they can't take personal responsibility, but they can take responsibility for that open wound and for those who have, who they are associated with that have practiced that and continue to practice that, and therefore for that we can be grievously sorry.
Yeah, and I've seen it happen. When I taught on this in years past, and I remember students from Europe and stuff, they'd come up to me weeping and just want to hug me. They felt so terrible. And then I'd say, look, if a Jewish person comes to you and brings it up, say, listen, I am so terribly sorry.
Exactly.
for these false representatives of Jesus did. Yeah. Please forgive us and let me show you who he really is.
I had an experience at Auschwitz. We went with several young Jewish believers, and there was a German Christian girl, about 21, 22 years old, and she was following Eva and I around in the barracks at Birkenau. And finally I thought, what do you want? You know, why are you following me? And I said, can I help you? And she said, yes, I wanted to just say how sorry I am for what the German people did. I am so sorry. And I've said I'm sorry to a Jewish friend before, but I wanted to speak to someone who was personally hurt because both my parents survived the Holocaust. My grandparents died at Auschwitz.
Wow.
She said, my brothers died. I had four brothers who died at Auschwitz. She said, I wanted to just say, I am so sorry. And I was just taken aback by that, and I was so touched.
Mm.
And then she said, I asked her why it was, we were talking about why so often it is minimized in German, among the German young people, and I loved her heart. She said, I can do her little German accent, they don't know Jesus, and they don't know what to do with the guilt.
Mm.
And I thought, what a wonderful experience to meet this girl. And so that apology to me, though she did nothing, meant so much.
Yeah, I was in Korea, South Korea, and we were praying about the release of my book, Her Hands Are Stained with Blood. And these Korean Christians had this tremendous burden to pray for Israel. And they were sobbing and wailing and drenching the carpet with their tears. It was very intense. This is a group of about 10, 12 people that gathered regularly to pray. And as I was praying, I felt the Lord say to me, it's only these tears of love that are going to wipe away the stain of blood. Because there's no theological argument against tears, is there?
No. It's really remarkable. I didn't think I was mad at anyone. I didn't feel like, and this girl touched my heart with her attitude.
Yeah. So we can be ambassadors of reconciliation. And in many ways, Gentile believers, Michael, can do stuff that we can't.
Of course.
Because we're already ostracized. We're Jewish believers.
You guys are on the outs.
There are Jewish intellectuals and leaders. They'll dialogue with Christian friends. There's one Jewish leader who's dialogued publicly with Erwin Lutzer, but won't with me because I'm a Jewish believer. So there are doors that can be opened to the Gentile church as bridge builders.
That Jewish leader was supposed to have me on that program with Erwin Lutzer until he heard I was a Jewish believer.
Really?
And then it was just Erwin Lutzer.
Yeah, we had one that was all set up. The two of us and another radio commentator, it was all set up. Church was going to have over 1,000 people in attendance. And I told the organizer, in my gut, something doesn't feel right. They said, no, it's confirmed. I said, check again. They checked again. They said, oh, not him. So, all right, we'll be right back. Stay with us.
The Line of Fire with your host, Dr. Michael Brown. Get into the Line of Fire now by calling 866-34-TRUTH. Here again is Dr. Michael Brown.
I'm sitting with Dr. Michael Rydelnik, a dear friend. He and his wife Eva have become dear friends. In fact, I got to watch some of their parenting skills in Israel. You've got two boys.
Yeah.
And we were with your younger
son. Yeah, but he's an adult already.
Yeah, right? But he served in the IDF and we were together in Israel. So they're a typical Jewish family and they're ragging on each other the whole time. I mean, a wonderful relationship. It was neat to see the closeness of the family. So Michael told me that one day you're going to write a book called Building Self-Esteem
Through Ridicule.
So a Jewish parenting book, Building Self-Esteem Through Ridicule. That's a sign that you really like somebody. All right. On a totally serious note, and then I want to respond to a few questions we were asked during one of the breaks from our great live audience here. Give yourselves a hand. Terrific. I became aware some years ago of media bias that was more subtle, that if an Israeli was killed by Palestinian terrorists, it would say is Israeli dead.
Killed.
Yeah, killed.
Doesn't
or
say who killed him.
Bomb blows up Israeli. Okay.
Yeah.
So look at this Time headline. Hamas member killed after Israeli teens found dead. And he's killed because he's throwing a grenade.
Grenade, yeah.
All right,
yeah.
So then he's killed after his violent attempted act. So he's killed, but after Israeli teens are found dead. Doesn't say who killed them. Connection with Hamas, but that's these little subtle things.
It's so subtle, and people don't even realize how they're being manipulated with it. One of the things that I found today, there was a statement the president asked that no one do anything to destabilize the situation.
Yeah, or and use restraint. He gives his condolences and then says use restraint.
And don't. I think how much. I mean, how can you not? The situation is already destabilized. If Israel acts now, is to restabilize the situation.
Yeah, absolutely. All right, a few questions that I was asked in the break. Jump in on any of these, Michael. I know I've focused on this a lot, but the burden that God gave me in terms of homosexual issues, reach out and resist. Reach out to the people with compassion, resist the agenda with courage. And then a question was asked about how can we treat people respectfully, say, hey, you make choices, we make choices, without allowing certain lines to be blurred. And then a passport-related question that right now passports say male-female. Well, lots of things right now say male-female, but that continues to change. There are more and more that will say male-female or other. I went to check in at the airport the other day, and it had these new questions as I was checking in on the screen, and one was male-female. I wondered how long it was going to be. Then it just disappeared entirely. But there are states now where you can have your birth certificate changed.
Oh my.
Just based on if you have sex change surgery, or in some cases you don't need to have sex change surgery, just that you've been under counseling for a couple of years. A 12-year-old in Canada, so this is still a kid, has now had their birth certificate changed. It's based on the child's self-perception. You're changing the birth certificate. So there has been discussion about passport issues, those types of things. Parent issues, do you have to say mother, father? For example, in Spain, it's just progenitor A or progenitor B, parent A or parent B, because you don't want to say mother, father anymore, because that's assuming things, so that could be discriminatory. So you fully expect that there has to be another option at a certain point. Time magazine said that transgender, this is the new civil rights issue right now. So this is what we fully expect to see, that either there'll be other options or you can have identity changed. Fairly easy to get your driver's license identity changed. And again, not to say that people aren't troubled, not to say there aren't issues, because we certainly want to see people whole, but to say that you do not overturn society based on this. For example, if you a woman came up to me the other day, and she had some little kids, and she said, look, I was speaking in California. She said, I don't want my little kids in the bathroom. This is California. I don't want my kid in the bathroom, and girls come into the boys' room, and we can't do anything about it. But you can't, because that would be discrimination based on gender identity. So, you know, she was asking, what do we do about situations like that? And I said, you know, it's like you have one deaf kid in the school, so now no one can talk. Everyone has to use sign language. So in trying to accommodate one, you inconvenience everyone. Michael, are you aware of any issues in the larger educational world or Christian world where there's pressure or accreditation or things like that if you don't conform?
There is a great deal of pressure so that we are now having a very clear statement in our catalog. We just hammered out as a faculty about what the Moody Bible Institute position is, because if we don't have it clearly as a policy statement, it could very well lead to lawsuits afterwards. And so the school has just produced and done a really great job at producing a biblical theology of sexuality, and it's going to be in our catalog.
Yeah, and these are issues that are going to be faced. So on a practical level, the whole question of reach out and resist. And let me just ask this one question first, Michael, because we're limited in time. I want to answer. If folks want to find out about Moody or your broadcaster, what's the best place to go?
Best thing to do is you can go one of two places, openlineradio.org. That's the name of the program that I am on, Openline. And so openlineradio.org, or you can just go to michaelrydelnick.org. And it's hard enough to find how I spell my name.
Spell your name. Spell your name.
R-Y-D-E-L-N-I-K. So the best thing, I'll just say, go to openlineradio.org.
And they can find out about Moody Bible Institute.
Yeah, they can find everything. And then you can also scroll down. There's a link to my personal webpage as well.
And you do tours to Israel pretty frequently?
I do tours to Israel, and just came back from a European World War II heritage tour. That was just fantastic. But, yeah, so.
Awesome. All right, so let me just quickly, and the new Bible commentary, the Moody Bible commentary.
The Moody Bible commentary, yes.
All right. So just very quickly, in terms of reach out and resist, on the reach out part, we need to ask God to give us a broken heart, to feel pain, rejection others have gone through, and to ask him for his heart. If you read my book, Can You Be Gay and Christian, it'll really sensitize you to the issues and some of the struggles people have had. And then you build relationship. You do your best to sit and talk. If someone you're talking to, you're interacting with, and they identify as gay or lesbian, I always ask them, hey, tell me your story. Tell me about your, you know, or hey, I'm a believer in Jesus. I believe in the Bible. How do you look at someone like me? And do my best to let them talk and hear and understand. And then like anything else, you seek to build relationship. On the resist part, it's largely a matter of getting educated, largely a matter of knowing what the issues are. And then if folks go to my website, aqueerthing.com, the website for the book, aqueerthing.com, where you can click on Get Involved. In all different areas, we have suggestions. And then bottom line, in terms of our society, everyone can do as they please, but if we redefine marriage, it has societal implications. It has societal implications throughout all the length and breadth of the land. So everyone has the right to live as they please, but we must recognize as God's people, as Martin Luther King said, that the church is not the master of the state or the servant of the state, but the conscience of the state. So we as God's messianic people must be the conscience of the state and be a witness. It's not by intimidation or taking over, but by shining the light. All right, friends, remember, visit my website, Ask Dr. Brown, askdrbrown.org. We have a special offer just 24 hours with A Queer Thing Happened to America. Just found out about that, so take advantage of it. My bottom line today, if we will unconditionally give ourselves to God and say, here I am, send me, use me, he will hold nothing back from you. And you'll be shocked to see what the fruit that comes out of your life.